Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberto's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, May 28th. I hope everyone had a nice long holiday weekend. This is the 21st episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, we're going to be talking culinary schools and pastry with a carbs dealer. More about that in a moment. But first, as I do on every show, I will give my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round questions, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off with my PR tip of the week. Okay, so today's tip is to be organized and find a system that works for you. Whether you use Word, keep a Google Calendar, save your contacts on a database, utilize Excel spreadsheets, or take notes on your iPhone or scratch pad, make sure you are organized in a way that's efficient for you. I know, like myself, you're busy and juggling many things, so you need to keep on top of it all. Find what works for you and stick with it. That's my tip today. Be organized. All right, I'm excited about my guest today. He's someone who I'm sure is very organized. It's Chef Jansen Chan. He is the Director of Pastry Operations at the International Culinary Center, otherwise known as ICC. Originally from Northern California, Jansen began baking at a very young age. After graduating from the University of California in Berkeley with a degree in architecture, he followed his true passion for baking by moving to Paris and graduating from Le Cordon Bleu with a pâtisserie diploma. After culinary school, Jansen went to San Francisco to continue his training in some of the city's finest restaurants, including the Fifth Floor. He then accepted an invitation to work for Chef Alain Ducasse at the Essex House in New York City, as well as Mix restaurants in Las Vegas and NYC. Under the tutelage of Ducasse, Jansen came to master the craft of baking and pastry in fine dining. He most recently worked as executive pastry chef at Oceana, where for 5 years he indulged NYC diners with his sumptuous and visually arresting desserts and artisanal breads. Jansen joined the ICC, International Culinary Center, as Director of Pastry Arts in 2012. So welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming out here. I'm super excited to talk with you and hear more about your background, because it's interesting that, so you went from architecture to baking. So when did you decide to make that move?
Well, it's actually not that far-fetched going from architecture to baking. I always tell all my students this, that in architecture, you know, obviously it's a design industry, but it's really a lot of organization. The architect is the middleman, if you don't know much about construction, right? The architect comes up with the drawing, but then he has to organize the engineers, the client, the state, and they have to keep the vision alive. So the pastry chef is kind of the designer. He's creating a dessert, he or she, that is, creating a dessert, a showpiece, right, a wedding cake, and they're going to organize themselves and keep the vision, but they got to work with the client. They have to work with the conditions, whatever it's going to be. The cake's going to be delivered in the picnic during the summer, or, you know, they're going to employers in a restaurant, and but they have to keep the vision alive and the creativity there and be kind of the artists. And so for me, there was a lot of similarities. Also, architecture tends to be a lot of steps in planning. Mm-hmm. So in pastry, it's the exact same thing. You can't just make a cake. You have to plan it out.
Right.
You know, you're going to bake the cake, you're going to make a filling, you're going to make a frosting. All these things are kind of things that are thought out and have a process, and you have to kind of follow that process. So it's kind of a way of thinking and a way of approaching your craft, and architecture school was perfect for that because it really trained me in a way that culinary school or just working in the industry could never have done. So it gives me kind of a more unique perspective.
Right. And I'm thinking with pastry, it is true that you really do have to lay out the plan more than I think in savory culinary cooking, where it's a little, I don't know, with pastry, it's all measuring. So I think even more it's tied together with architecture.
There's obviously a lot of chemistry and physics and baking. And one of the cool things about pastry and baking is a lot of times we're creating the product in whatever form we want. We're taking lots of different things, you know, a basic cake, flour, eggs, butter, sugar, and we're transforming it into anything that we want it to be. Because those four ingredients can go in so many directions. We can make cream puffs, we can make cakes, we can make cookies, and it can go in whatever form we want. So we have a lot of options.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So, but if you don't plan, then you're just going to be disorganized and messy, and you'll never survive in the industry.
Right, right. Yeah, it makes sense. So lucky you got to go to Paris. And what was that like?
Well, see, when I, you know, back when I switched careers and I decided, you know, I was going to go, and I've always loved baking, right? So I decided that architecture wasn't going to be the thing for me. So I said, you know, I've always wanted to go to France and live there and learn French. And I love French pastries. You know, most pastries are French-based in technique. So I figured, why not just go to France? So I kind of, at that point in my life, I was doing the things that were making me happiest. So that was going to France and living there and going to school. Why not? I mean, I was young, and this is, I actually had barely just started my career in this industry.
How long was your culinary program? How long were you in Paris?
It's almost a year long, about 9.5 months. So, and it's very French, very classically grounded in basic French principles, which are great. I mean, to this day, I remember most of my training in school.
That's a good sign. were the other students, was it a mix of Americans and internationals, different cultures?
The school was about a third American and the majority international, from all over, from South America, Asia, fewer Europeans, because a lot of them went more to state schools that would be covered by, you know, by the country. But, you know, it was a huge mixed bag of people.
Right.
But it was all classic French chefs, a lot of MOFs, people who were just really just on top of their game.
I'm sure. I'm sure it was a fabulous experience. So then you came back and you started working in restaurants, first in San Francisco, and then you came to New York. So talk about some of those highlights. And
yeah, well, after I went to school, I wanted to, you know, I felt like I knew so much technique, but I also, being a little bit older at that point, because it was a career change, I also realized there was still a lot for me to learn in terms of the industry, like understanding how it worked. Because culinary school, as much as we can prep you for it, you still need to work your way up the ladder. You need to understand, you can earn your chops, kind of, you know? So my goal and my direction to myself was to just work in a kitchen, just to shut up and work, and then work for at least a year, and then just keep applying for better restaurants and better chefs. So every time I would finish a job, I would choose a better restaurant and a better chef. In my eyes, at least.
You chose very wisely from looking at your resume. It's impressive.
And I worked at some really great restaurants, and I was really happy in San Francisco. I think I was really fortunate to fall into the fifth floor, which Laurent Gras had just taken over. And I didn't know much about him except that he was an exceptional Michelin-rated chef from Paris at the time, actually from Ducasse. And he had just finished there, and he was coming. Oh, actually, he was coming from New York. He did Picot Alley. And when he opened it, he had just taken over the team. And he was just, when I interviewed with him, he said, I'm taking over and transforming the pastry department. It's like, do you want to be part of this? And I was like, based just on you, I'll take it. Didn't know anything what he was going to do with the restaurant, what direction he was going in. But because of his resume, it followed my criteria. And it was a great experience. It was a very intense year. There are a lot of changes. And he brought an intensity that I had not seen before working in other restaurants in San Francisco. And that was kind of the gateway for me to get into Ducasse, because that intensity is definitely there working for him. And eventually getting into Ducasse and working at Mix and Essex House, I really thrived in this fine dining French experience. And there's such a high level in the pastry department, the expectations, that it's pretty amazing. And it's also hard to find. If you go to a 3 Michelin star restaurant in Europe, particularly France, there's such an elevation in the food and their approach, especially to pastry. And that's something that's hard to replicate here, because I think American palate isn't there in terms of, or at least our expectations aren't there. So to have like such an amazing display of bread and, you know, a trolley of desserts and petit fours and, you know, the onslaught of these chocolates and macaroons and like all these things that are such a pinnacle of technique. You just don't see it every day or very commonly,
right,
in fine dining restaurants in New York even now. But, you know, I was lucky. I was at a time where Ducasse was in America and having this 3-star restaurant and being part of that. And, you know, I did sugar sculptures, chocolate sculptures, these specialty order things, and things that most pastry cooks in America aren't required to do. I was forced to do, and it was amazing.
It sounds amazing. I'm just thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, it's so awesome.
It's one of the few things in life where if you can find a job where you're really excited mm-hmm. to go back to, and one that you just want to be at, it's an amazing gift. I'm not going to lie. I remember my first job was working for Coletto's, which is kind of a touristy restaurant in San Francisco.
In San Francisco? Okay.
It was a bakery and a restaurant. And I remember it was my first job. It was right before I went to culinary school. And I was hourly. And I used to say, you know what? I'll get off the clock, but I'll stay another 2 hours because I don't mind.
Loved it.
I loved it. I wanted to see how the dessert came out. I wanted to see how the something that was in the oven, or, you know, I wanted to see service. And there was just, I had such a hunger and such a joy
right.
being there that, you know, money was not that it wasn't important. It was definitely secondary to the enrichment and the experience, which I knew would pay off at the end.
Yeah, but that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to find the career that you love, and then it doesn't seem like work.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
Yeah, you've done that.
I don't know if you're bad telling people, like, because if you don't do that, then your life isn't as important. But I feel like it's a gift.
Don't feel bad, because I can tell just you're smiling the whole time you're talking, and you love what you do. And that's, you know, shows why I think you've been so successful too, because you're happy doing it.
I guess so. Like I said, I think it's a gift. I think it's a gift that I don't take for granted, and I work hard. I still mm-hmm. work hard for it. I don't think anything comes for free. I think where you land
right.
in life is because of your own determination and kind of your passion, which, you know, they
yeah,
feed off each other.
I agree. So then, what led you to Oceana, which is when I met you, when you were at
yes.
Oceana?
Well, I had a great... First of all, I was Oceana for like a little more than 5 years. I had left Ducasse, and that was a tough decision. Essex House had just closed, and that was their 3-star Michelin restaurant. And they were going to open a door, which was going to be a step down from that. And at that point, I had spent almost 3 years with Ducasse and worked at 3 properties, and I felt it was time for me to be the pastry chef, which is a big... and difficult decision, I think, when you want to be in charge, because that means you're really the person that's putting out the ideas, and it's going to be your name on the menu. It's going to be your ideas, kind of. And to me, that was a big responsibility. You know, I didn't want to just be the pastry chef and then kind of screw it up, especially in New York City. There's not a lot of second chances. So Oceana had just taken on a new chef, Ben Pollinger, at the time. And I interviewed with him and did a tasting, and, you know, he took a chance on a new kid. But he also had a Ducasse background, and so he understood my organization and my passion and my vision. So we gelled very quickly, and I think that's also really important, that the chef and the pastry chef gel and think the same, or at least have the same approach to food, because if there isn't kind of a mutual respect, then I think that will reflect in the food and the dining experience, as well as the environment in the kitchen. which is just as important as the food we produce, because that kind of love transfers and makes its way all the way to the plate in the dining room.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I certainly can vouch for the fact that I think you gelled even outside the kitchen, because I always saw you guys together.
I was his second wife, as his wife would say.
No, you definitely got along well, and both very likable chefs. So.
And we're still good friends today.
Oh, that's great.
He still calls me up for pastry advice all the time.
Even though you left him.
I mean, it was sad to not interact with him every day. But, you know, I mean, we have a great friendship now. I have a huge amount of respect for him. And you know, that's not gone, and nor will it ever go away. But you know, Oceana was really lucky. We moved restaurants, during my time there, and we basically got to relaunch the restaurant. And that was a big opportunity for me, because I was able to put a whole new menu out and kind of have a new, a breath of fresh air. So I kind of had the original Oceana, which was a little bit more formal with it had a tasting menu. And then we went to the more, casual spot, I should say. Not so
modern.
Much casual, but modern, probably. Modern. Yeah, it's not that casual.
I don't know.
It's right in Rockefeller Center, so.
I never dined at the original, but I've been to the current one. And yeah, I would say it's chic, it's modern, it's beautiful.
And they let me plan out the kitchen, the space, the layout. I worked awesome. With the architect. With Chef Ben and I, we worked long hours with the kitchen architect to really make sure that our voices were heard, because, you know, we were the ones that were going to be in there
right.
for 60 hours a week. So
a chef's dream.
I learned a lot, and I was able to really give my input. I still think it's one of the best pastry kitchens in New York City. It's the pastry part. It's not that big, but I did a great job. I thought of everything that a pastry chef would like, and within my budget, I got everything that I needed. From little details, like where the lights are on the ceiling, you know, little things like they should be above the counter and not above the corridor, because when you're standing all day, you're casting a shadow on yourself. But from an architect's perspective, you always like the corridor, because that's where people are walking. That's where the hazards are. But
smart.
I had to tell them, no, you put the lights above the workspaces. It's much better. Little things like making sure the aisles were wide enough so that a sheet tray walking through the crowd could actually fit, and little things, you know, like making sure that the speed racks, garbage cans, space. I thought of everything, and it's really amazing.
Well, one day I will get my tour of that kitchen, and we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. But the seeds you sow.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hi, welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Jansen Chan from ICC. And we're talking pastry culinary schools. We're going to talk culinary school now a little bit. So your last restaurant job, you were at Oceana, and then you decided to go to teach, or not to, not really to teach, but to be the director of the teachers.
Pastry department.
Yeah. Got it.
You know, it's a tough thing. Once what does the pastry chef do once they've had a successful run as a pastry chef? There's several options. You kind of hit the glass ceiling within the restaurant because the executive chef is ultimately the executive chef. So either you open your own business or, you know, or some facet of that. So I was given the opportunity to go to the International Culinary Center. They approached me and it just worked out really well. It was exactly what I was looking for without knowing I was looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm very analytical of the work I do. And I wanted to have a bigger voice in the pastry industry. I mean, it's great that you can create desserts for a customer to experience, but I wanted something more, something bigger. I had a huge knowledge base now of pastries, and I wanted to utilize that in some fashion. And going to the school was a way for me to continue that and foster more knowledge, but also to communicate my experiences in a much, much larger scale. I never considered working for a culinary school until the moment came when the position was open, actually. So I was very fortunate, and the timing was just right. I felt like I had accomplished a lot at Oceana, and it was time for me to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a perfect landing spot.
Well, so what does your role involve then? What's a day in the life?
Well, the International Culinary Center is a big school. Right in Soho. It's five floors. We've been around for our 30th anniversary this year. We've had a huge array of alumni come out from our doors, as well as great chef instructors. We have a huge history. We're a really big part of the New York City culinary.
And it changed from FCI, French Culinary Institute, to the International because you grew.
We kept expanding. Yeah. We were all French, and then we added the Italian program, and then we added the Spanish program. Less heard, we added a cake program and a bread program. So, and the cake program is more of American-style cakes. So we really were beyond the French Culinary Institute, and Dorothy had to go and, you know, it was a good move to change the name because mm-hmm. we're a bigger umbrella, and it wasn't true to what we were anymore. So we've evolved. Bringing the director of pastry, it's a big job, but it's
sounds like a big job.
It's a big job in the sense that there's two big programs in the school: the career pastry path and the career culinary path. And I represent basically the pastry side, and so there's the big pastry programs and all the programs that fall underneath that. Which, you know, I mentioned the cake program, the bread program, and then all the what we call non-career programs. You know, we have a techniques class, we have rec classes, we have specialty classes in specific areas. For example, a Madeleine class or a pâte à choux class. And there's all these classes. Everything falls underneath kind of my umbrella, as well as a huge team of chef instructors. And then the curriculum. That's kind of where my biggest tackle has been since I've been there is working on the curriculum. It's 600 hours for the career pastry program, and it needed a little updating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of my first tasks, is to reexamine it and to start making changes. The trickiest part about all this is that the school never shuts down. We're constantly open in terms of we have rolling enrollment. So classes start every 2 months in pastry, every month in culinary. So changes come, but we need to implement them while having students in the building, as well as training our staff. And we also write all our textbooks in-house. So
wow.
It's a huge collaboration on my side mm-hmm. with my team, working with the chef instructors, my coordinators, as well as the education department to make everything kind of seamless on the front end. For the student experience. So any changes that have come into the program, a class before you might have a different program, but we make it all seamless so the student experience wouldn't be unknown. And, you know, we can tell what class level you're on and what class you're in and the differences. And we make it all work out. The changes are so big that we've done one huge round. And then we have another huge round that's supposed to start in January 2015. So these have been my two big projects since I've started on board, getting these changes, because it's a big process. And also, one of our deans is Jock Torres. and I meet with him
fabulous
regularly.
Yeah, no,
it's a horrible thing to do. I mean, Tuesday morning, I spent my morning with him at his chocolate shop.
And you have chocolate chip cookies. His chocolate chip cookies, my favorite.
It's very, very good. I love Jack Torres, and he's great, and he has so much passion and love. It's
yeah,
contagious.
Yeah,
and
it is.
So you know, that's one of my fun responsibilities is to work with him to keep him updated with the programs, the school, and keep him involved with all the changes that are coming ahead for the program. And it's great. And he's very receptive to change. And that's another great thing. You know, he's not like, we have to do the classics. We have to do this. No, he's open to everything. And he gives me input, gives me ideas and feedback. And it's a great collaborative experience. Not even just with him, also our other dean, Emily Lucchetti, and also just everyone on staff. It's, you know, again, I've become the architect a little bit. I have a vision for this program, and I need to pull in all the sides and coordinate all these different parts to make it move forward and to implement it. So it's great, and it kind of captures all my knowledge base. That's what's kind of exciting for me.
That's why it's working for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrific. So last week I had on Lee Schrager and Adina Sussman, and they are the co-authors of Fried and True Cookbook. And I asked them to ask you a question. They both asked questions. So
okay. The
first one was from Lee, and he wanted to know, buttercream or fondant?
As a classically French-trained person, I have to say buttercream, and it's definitely have to be a French-style buttercream, because American buttercream is a powdered sugar and butter or shortening whipped confection, which doesn't really melt in your mouth.
Get technical with us, please.
I can get very technical. But, you know, fondant is something that I have learned to work with more now that I've worked for the school, because we have a cake program, and students do have to learn how to work with fondant. And it's an incredible medium, because it's like an edible Play-Doh. It can be so much, and it's still tasty. It's still sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, if I for a cake, the fondant is there more for show than taste. Certainly, I would eat it if it's on a cake. But a classic buttercream, you can't go too wrong. So I'm voting buttercream.
Okay. I hear you. And the second question was from Adina, and she asked, how has the gluten-free and low-sugar trend impacted the pastry world, and are you making any accommodations for it?
It's like a perfect segue to the changes I made in the program.
Uh-huh.
We've actually added that. We've added a bunch of topics at the end of the program called restaurant modules. It's the program now ends with learning about restaurant desserts. For me, it was about it used to be earlier in the program, and I moved to the very end of the program, because for me, the idea is a restaurant dessert is kind of taking all the techniques and knowledge you've learned throughout the program, and then you're starting to apply it in a very much individual sense, and there's a lot of complexity and mastery of, you know, learning how to mix match textures or flavors or contrast temperatures. And so it was put towards the end. I also thought this is the chance for things for higher learning, where you need to start developing your palate, thinking more outside the box, because the first majority of the program is really, you know, learn how to make this and copy this, make this and copy this. And towards the end, you should start thinking, you know, this is when we introduce seasonality, the topics of mm-hmm. that. So we've added pastry for specialized diets, and that includes gluten-free, vegan desserts, dairy-free, and sugar alternatives. We don't do sugar-free because that usually incorporates some sort of artificial sugars, and that's where I kind of draw the line. But the idea was that you've learned a lot of techniques, so now it's your time to learn the vocabulary where you can use those same techniques and create desserts or pastries for people who have specialized diets. So we incorporated that. We also incorporated wine, cheese, coffee, tea, which actually was recommended by one of our PAC committee members. We have an advisory committee member because he opened the bakery, and he suggested, he's like, I wish I knew more about coffee and tea. I was like, I opened the bakery, I knew nothing about it. And it made sense. I was like, yeah, why don't pastry chefs know more about coffee or tea?
Yeah.
And so we edit a whole section where you learn, you spend half a day with coffee and then you spend half a day with tea and you taste and learn about the process of making tea and coffee, bean to cup, and then you do some tastings. Same with the wines. It's about dessert wines and fortified wines and spirits. These are all things that pastry chefs either use or pair with, but we should have a better understanding, a higher learning of these products to make us more sophisticated with our palates and just with general knowledge of food. So these are all things that we've actually added already, and it's already in the program, and it's been really, really, really well received.
Wow, I think that's terrific. Okay, great. We're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do my speed round in industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Okay, we're back. This is All in the Industry and Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Jansen Chan. It's time for my speed round. Are you ready? What it is I'm gonna name two things, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
And you just pick one. Like your preference.
Do I need to give an answer or just, I mean, a reason? No, or
most people seem to start to give a reason when I get to some, but it's really meant to be more of a speed round. But feel interpret it however you want.
All right. I'm ready.
So I do want to know, chocolate or vanilla?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
No. That normally I don't, but for you, I want to know.
Vanilla.
Okay. Very cool. I'm chocolate.
All right.
Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Out.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Large plates.
You're doing great. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I mean, I lived in Europe. It would be much easier in my life to be all-inclusive.
Ah, awesome. Everyone else has gone for tipping. I'm glad I got one going the other way. Okay.
And I've never been a server in my life, but I still think all-inclusive. I think because service is so important.
Yeah.
It's an integral part of your experience. So I feel bad. I mean, I can't imagine someone short. I've never shorted anyone less than 15% in my life. I can't imagine doing it.
Right.
And the fact that you can, it just seems like a weird option.
All right. I hear you. Cool. How about communal table or chef's counter?
Can I vote neither?
Sure.
I mean, chef's counter, I guess. I'm not a big fan of sharing a table with people I don't really know. I go to eat to talk to someone and to experience them, not necessarily my strangers. And, you know, it's nice, I guess, occasionally, but it's not my thing.
Got it. How about baking or pastry? Can you
pastry.
Even choose?
Oh, yeah,
you
they're
can.
Different.
All right. Oceana location one, Oceana location two.
Oh, location two. Only because I had input in that design.
How about teaching or cooking in a restaurant? Can you?
Ooh, that's tough. That's, to me, totally two different experiences. It's the rewards are bigger with teaching,
mm-hmm.
and the rewards are totally, I mean, the rewards are big with cooking too. It's just very different. I feel like the impact with teaching will be long lasting. You know, I think people will forget eating at Oceana with my desserts.
I remember your desserts from Oceana. I mean, don't ask me the names, but I remember I love them.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, two more.
All right.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Oh, dessert. Well, I mean, I love cheese plate too. Don't get me wrong, but dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
I live in Manhattan, so Manhattan.
Awesome. That's the game.
Oh, that was easy.
Yeah. It's fun. Okay, so let's talk some industry news. So today in the New York Times, Narcissa was reviewed by Pete Wells, and it got 2 stars. And I did a solo dining experience at Narcissa, and I loved it. And so I was happy to see. It was a nice review. He really liked the vegetables, and he liked the desserts.
Yeah.
So what did you think? Have you been there?
I have not been there. I've been to Dovetail a few times. The pastry chef is Deborah Rakiot from Gotham Bar and Grill.
Thank you for pronouncing her name for me. I was scared to say it.
She's great. She's a great pastry chef. She's been around in the New York pastry scene for many, many years. So it's really great to see recognition to another pastry chef. I actually am guilty of always reading the New York Times and scrolling down to look at dessert first and to see what they say or name. And I also want to know if they name the pastry chef, because I want to see recognition for other pastry chefs, because, you know, it only fuels my, you know, industry. So
I think it's cool you do that.
And then I go back and read the whole thing. And it's funny. I do that. I just want to know. Because I'm always excited for someone to get their name mentioned. I remember seeing my name mentioned for the first time, and Frank Bruni wrote about me, and I was like, oh my God, it's pretty amazing to get a review and to your name.
Yeah, no, and especially in the New York Times, and they don't always mention the pastry chefs. They don't.
They generally only mention the pastry chef when they like the pastries, to be quite honest. I mean, it would be kind of mean.
That's good.
It would be mean to be like, oh, so-and-so made a dessert and it was awful. Right. I mean, it has happened, but it's very rare. They usually are. They try to stay a little bit more positive, which I think that's great, because writing should be somewhat positive and not all critical.
It was a very positive review, and I'm happy for John Fraser.
Yes.
And then last week, the New York Times reviewed River Cafe, and they gave it 2 stars, Pete Wells. And I've never been to River Cafe. Have you been there?
No, and it's one of those classic New York institutions.
I know.
Which I'm really glad it reopened, I think.
Yeah. Well, it shut down after Sandy. Mm-hmm. And it took, I guess, a year and a half to, or about a year to restore it. And from the review, they said it's pretty much the way it was. It's a 36-year-old restaurant, and it's a really special occasion place, a beautiful view back of the city. I would like to go one day.
It is very nice. I mean, supposedly, and the pictures look great, and it has a view of Manhattan.
Yeah.
I'm glad that certain institutions have remained, because I think that's really important, especially for being in New York, you know, to have all the diversity of restaurants and the styles of restaurants. And it just means a lot more. I mean, I'm even happy that Tavern on the Green is back.
Yeah, true. It is great that it's back, and it's, I think from I haven't been there yet, but what I've read, I think it's a very fresh new approach versus, I think, River Cafe is more traditional and what it was and holding that.
I think Tavern on the Green, it connects more with the park users, whereas, you know, River Cafe it's still a destination because of its view. And I think it should be that way because of its view. I mean, Tavern on the Green, you just feel like you're in the park, and you don't necessarily dress up and go to the park.
Right.
Good.
Yeah, right. No. Good point. Okay, and the last thing I wanted to bring up was on Eater. They were talking about this opening of Morgan Stern's Finest Ice Cream. And this is Nick Morgan Stern, who previously worked at Gramercy Tavern in Danielle. And he's opened this. They kind of said it was kind of kooky ice cream shop, very interesting flavors like Fernet Black Walnut and Brazilian Bourbon. And I don't know, it sounds, the menu, it made me hungry. I want to check it out. Are you familiar with him?
I don't know Nick very well. I know of him because he also has been a pastry chef for many years in the New York scene. I think he was at the General Green for a long time here in Brooklyn. He opened that place. You know, ice cream seems to be the big fad of the last 3-4 years. That's been ice cream. First of all, it's never really gone away. Everyone loves ice cream. I think there's a lot. There's a very fresh look at ice cream and all the toppings and the flavor combinations, and that's really exciting for pastry chefs because it's a new place. It's a place where they can experiment. You know, people are no longer just expecting strawberry vanilla chocolate. They want to see balsamic strawberry with, you know, salty chocolate. You know, they want to see all those interesting combinations. And it's really exciting that these ice cream parlors are opening up because people's palates will expand and expectations are higher. And then usually, as New York always is it's culinary capital, these things then get reproduced all across the country because the press will pick up on it and people will try it and talk about it. And it's all great for anybody in the industry in general because we're always looking for new ideas and new things. And, you know, I think it's great. I think it was an interesting thing. I think it was in the Eater article about how he was talking about his Philadelphia-style ice cream. And I think ice cream is one of the most misunderstood things because everyone thinks ice cream is just ice cream, but there really is big differences between the custard-based ice creams, the non-dairy ice creams, which are really sorbets, versus dairy ice creams that don't have eggs. There's all these categories, and everyone just thinks it's just ice cream.
Well, it's true, but you're right. There's been a trend for all these high-end, cool ice cream places. Actually, when my friends opened a place called Luca and Bosco, which is on Essex Street Market, and she has things like fudge whiskey and I don't know, like very innovative flavors. And you're seeing a lot of these places. And now we're going into summer and 'tis the season.
It's so perfect timing.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take one more break and we're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Okay, now, I've previously mentioned on this show that I not only dine solo, but I travel solo. So, I did travel solo this past weekend. I took a quick, very much relaxing, needed trip to Bermuda for the weekend by myself. And it was awesome. And so I obviously dined solo. I had a lot of great fish, a lot of local fish. I had Wahoo at Wahoo's, and I had rockfish tacos at the Pickled Onion. And actually, I took a photo of my taco, and it got picked up on Infatuation's Instagram Eats Sea Edition as their best photos of the weekend. So I was thrilled. And that's Eats with 5 E's, in case anyone wants to check that out. And all that was awesome, but I really want to give a shout out to this place I discovered in Hamilton, which is called Juice and Beans Cafe. And what I loved was I had an amazing green smoothie there. It was so good, I went back the next day and I had another one. I had a different kind. I had the green balance, and then I had the veggie patch. And both of them had kale and spinach and lots of good things in it for you. They were sweetened either with some sort of fruit, banana or pineapple, mango. It was awesome. So, I mean, it's a pricey drink. It was like $10 or $11, but I loved it. So Bermuda was awesome. And I would say go there for the pink sand, the crystal clear water, and the green smoothies. That's my solo experience. Yes, I'm the crazy girl that goes to Bermuda for the weekend by herself.
That sounds awesome.
Well, it was, and it's such an easy flight. It's 2 hours away, so it's a nice escape from New York. Anyone looking for a beach getaway? Okay, so we're getting to the end of the show. So now, Jansen, I wanted to see if you can ask a question for my guest next week, and it is Jono Pandolfi, and he is a ceramics designer. He does the dinnerware at amazing restaurants such as 11 Madison Park, The Nomad, Atera, WD50. I can't wait to talk to him because I think it's so cool that he does this dinnerware at these restaurants. So can you ask him a question?
first of all, his plates are amazing. I've eaten at Nomad several times, and the plates are always remarkable. Actually, we're both professionals that both use turntables. So I can't think of another, I guess, a DJ, right? There's very few professions that use a turntable. We use it for cakes. He uses it for pottery wheel.
But you're bonded.
We're bonded over that. So my question will be something along that line, because pastry chefs are... We love our tools. We love our baby spatulas. We love our tips. We love lots of tools. I just want to know what's his favorite or most essential tool that he loves to use.
Okay. Good question. I will ask him.
All right.
So thank you so much for coming out here.
It was great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed talking with you. We could talk some more and hear more about that Philadelphia ice cream. we'll have to do an ice cream show. We could just talk ice cream.
Easy. That could be at least an hour. Just on ice cream and then another one for sorbet.
Very cool. And I want to give a shout out also to the International Culinary Center, which is a sponsor of Heritage Radio Network. And your founder, CEO, Dorothy Keene Hamilton, has a show called Chef Story, which I love, that people should check out. So my guest today has been Jansen Chan. He's the director of pastry at the International Culinary Center. You can find him on Twitter at Jan B. Chan. And the school is at ICCEDU. And their website is internationalculinarycenter.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at All Industry, at Sherry Bayer, and at Bayer PR. My website's bayerpublicrelations.com. If you miss this live broadcast, you can always find us at heritageradionetwork.org. We're also on Stitcher and iTunes. And Stitcher has this cool feature called Listen Later that you should check out, because it's great. You can listen later, as the name implies. So thanks to my engineer, Jack, and everyone out there listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And I will be back next week with another live one. So please tune in then. This has been All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Everybody.